you're going to start the meeting. We don't have a quorum yet. I know where people were late last night, so that's not surprising. But I think we need to get started. Because, members, here's what's going on. We're going to hear from the agencies. They were to do outcomes, results-based budgets, so that citizens could understand what they're getting for their money. And it's important for us to see what results we're getting and what results we're not getting because of the coming budget cuts. So that's going to, so as you're asking questions, I hope that you have that as one of your, not a limited to, but one of your focuses. With that, we welcome the Pollution Control Agency. You are the first up to do the outcome-based budget, but all agencies will have the same wonderful privilege. So welcome to the committee this morning.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. For the record, I'm Myrna Hallback, the Chief Financial Officer for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Today, I'm going to talk to you about some of the key areas of our 2010 budget, focusing primarily on the guiding principles in this year of flux, both at the federal and the state level. A couple of those areas were our appropriation language from the legislature asked us to accomplish some activities within this time frame, and then some key measures that we are using to determine our outcomes for the budget to do. In addition to maintaining the activities associated with a regulatory agency, the portion of our permit timeliness, compliance, and enforcement, we also had some other principles that we used as we developed the FY 2010 spending plan. Of course, key was the continuation of the work started with the Clean Water Legacy Act, funded with one-time general fund and emphasized when the citizens passed the constitutional amendment. And we do understand the importance of making strides each year towards those outcomes. We need to improve our understanding of the environmental conditions by expanding our air and water monitoring networks, effectively using federal dollars to do such, leveraging partners in that work, and maintaining our efforts to meet the 10-year surface water monitoring schedule for watersheds. With the federal stimulus funds that became available last year, we had a unique opportunity to move projects forward that not only put Minnesotans back to work, but provide for cleaning up sites, improving our wastewater infrastructure, and making a difference in the mobile air emission sources. We also have important work using our prevention and assistance tools in improving compliance, reducing pollutant discharges, and increasing waste reduction and recycling. And this will be the least developed of our measures, but we'll show you kind of the activities we're moving towards and what we hope to accomplish with that in the future. And finally, we want to particularly focus on completing the construction activities in our closed landfill program that is now nearly 20 years old, and that we want to move into operation and maintenance and use those funds for other important work. So before moving into kind of the detail of the budget areas and outcomes, I thought I'd first address those parts of our appropriation that asked for some very specific activities on our webpage. First, we were required to improve our transparency. What you see on this slide is a picture of our fiscal transparency webpage. The link is on our main page right up front. When you link to this page, you have several documents available. One that shows the breakdown of our regulatory cost. One that compares our revenues expected with the expenditure for this work. Our performance management spreadsheet that we used last year during the session to work with you. And then links to the media pages where if someone's interested, they can find even additional information. Currently, our webpage is focused on the regulatory activities, but we hope in the future will be all of our work will be more transparent, particularly as we work with Minnesota Management and Budget and their new budgeting and accounting systems that will really allow us to do, we hope, more real-time and searching functions. I recognize this page is not very readable, but it is another key area that's new onto our webpage, and that's really documenting the fees we receive. We have a document that provides a summary but also provides detail. We update it quarterly, and we're providing a five-year comparison.
Excuse me, is this in our packets?
Yes, ma'am. It's in your packets, and I'm going to talk a little bit about them and explain just a little bit about all of those spreadsheets. And then I assume there'll be a few questions about them as well to do. And so why don't we start with that? In your packet, you will see four pages starting with a year-to-date summary. Actually, a couple pages. The first is a summary of all the fees and the total, just as they wrap up by media. And you'll note that the FY 2010 as compared to 2009 looks like it's not collecting very much. And that is because the majority of our fees come in annual fees, and those are billed once per year and at the spring of the year. So right now we're creating those invoices that will go out to the permitted parties for their annual fees to do. Behind that, you'll see a more detailed breakdown of what types of permits, what types of training sessions actually bring in the dollars. So this is the start of trying to make it more transparent where exactly our revenues come in. What is missing on this chart that we have not yet incorporated into our database are the compliance and enforcement fees. I do have a tally and a chart for that, but it is not yet brought into an annual basis here. So that's one of the improvements we'll be making in this chart. One of the other spreadsheets you have is actually our projected revenues. And again, all the revenue sources are provided on this one. It's a one page, looks like this. It provides you the application fees we're projecting to receive, the permit annual fees, our license and tank fees, training, the federal funds. We are given through some of our grant work with the Environmental Protection Agency specific funds to carry out training and permitting activities. So those are also reflected on here. And then that total projected revenue is provided as a comparison on our total costs so that someone might see where we are relative to projecting revenues versus costs. The last spreadsheet is a much more detailed breakdown than we used last session with you, in that this year for the regulatory cost by media and by program within the media, so our media are air, land, and water. We provided the activities that do it, but then also the funds across the top that are used to fund each of those activities. So when you see the 200 fund, that's our special revenue, and likely that is environmental impact statement work. Or in the case of training, that will be training fees received. The 300 is federal dollars that we receive to implement the program. And then the 330 is our environmental fund, which is where the permit fees and annual fees reside. So this way you can see by media the total dollars broken out, the FTEs, the salary for those FTEs, and then the non-salary cost. And it ultimately totals into a summary across so that you would be able to track how much a permit activities are costing us across all media, how much environmental assessment worksheets cost across all media, and so on. And so we really are working to provide that level of detail so everyone knows exactly what we're doing.
Let me just ask a question so I understand this a bit better, and it is very helpful that you're moving in this direction. But I'll look at land solid waste under the 330, which is the environment fund, and you're spending $14 million non-salary. I mean, what would that be for example?
The $14 million in this case would be the SCORE grants that go out, the hazardous waste grants that go out. And so in our world, they help us provide that assistance needed for permitting at the local level.
So that's all grant money?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And how much of that is just goes out in plain SCORE grants, and how much goes out in other grants? Do you know?
Of the $14.5 million that is shown there, 14.25 is SCORE grants.
Okay. Okay. If you want to continue, it's just I think as members have questions, we should ask them. So I we clarified for all of us, I think. You want to continue?
I didn't make copies of the performance management spreadsheet, but that is on the web. We have not updated that since the end of the session, and that's due to the number of changes that are occurring, and we have to do that manually. And so we are looking at updating it once we're through this legislative session. We've had a number of federal grants along with the unallotment and anticipating the budget reduction. It takes a significant amount of work right now because we do not yet have all the links made so we can push the button, so to speak, and have it come out. Last year, one of the areas we did have considerable discussion on was the cost of operating our permit and compliance programs. If you remember, at the time I was managing a fee rulemaking effort, and that process, the results of that are incorporated in the numbers that you see on the spreadsheets. We have completed our portion of those fee rules, and they're now nearing completion to be enacted, hopefully in March, and then we'll progress with that. It's anticipated they'll collect $5 million each fiscal year.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Hallbeck, I'm curious. We had a lengthy discussion about a ethanol plant down in southeastern Minnesota and thousands of dollars that were allocated by the agency folks towards the time they spent on that, and I thought that was real good that you had a way to account for those folks and the time they spent on that permitting process. With generally our economy in a standstill, where do all those folks' time get accounted to now when there's nothing going on, there's no permits being requested, so how do we account for those folks, and then how would that change as the way it was when they were all working on a permit?
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, we did have quite a discussion on that, and what we have done with that staff is they're not sitting idly at the agency. We've actually reprioritized them to some of the work that came with the federal stimulus in order to make and have our municipalities ready for the wastewater infrastructure grants that were available. Most of our folks that are in environmental assessment worksheets have come from the programs, and so they're able to help us back with permitting and those kinds of activities. Permitting itself is not completely stopped. We have amendments going on, and certainly our ethanol biofuels people have been involved with potential projects both on the cellulosic and on amendments.
Thank you. That's helpful. Do we get, Madam Chair and Ms. Hallbeck, do we get any of the federal stimulus money? Is that used where it will be for the wastewater infrastructure and such you were talking about? Does some of that backfill the staff time that's necessary, or does the state just incur those costs?
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, that some of the dollars actually do backfill some of those costs, and I have some of that as we move forward in the presentation. The next steps relative to the...
have a couple more questions.
Excuse me.
Representative
Torkelson. Thank you, Madam Chair. Director Hallbeck, I'm sorry I was in a minute or two late, but looking at the income sheet here, I don't see any fine income. Where is that accounted for?
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, right now the penalties are not showing up in that database. I do have a summary of them in one of my charts. It's an improvement we need to make in our database. The revenue chart and our standard fee system really is meant on permit applications in the annual, and so we're needing to improve and change that.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Director Hallbeck. You know, I was at a meeting recently, and I know the ethanol industry alone was fined $2.3 million last year. This is, you know, some significant money that's coming in, and I know there's been more fines announced since then, and it seems to me it should be part of the discussion here.
Madam Chair, it will be part of the discussion. I have a total of collected to date on one of my charts and a history back going back 4 more years from that on totals collected. So we'll be able to chat about that.
Thank you.
You mentioned federal funds and folks working on federal funds projects. Did the agency apply for and get all the federal funds available in your area?
Madam Chair, we applied. We were not recipients of some of the diesel era grants. We did get some of those to the state allocation, but we did not compete well enough on some of the competitive ones. Although our Minnesota Environmental Initiative was able to compete with supporting, so Minnesota did bring in more dollars, not directly to the agency.
So, in sum, you asked for everything that was available and didn't get some of it, but you got everything that was available that was non-competitive.
That's correct.
Okay, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as a follow-up to that, Ms. Hallbeck, there have been a couple federal initiatives announced in the last year, I think a Mississippi River initiative, Basin initiative, and a Great Lakes initiative. And so those are for the upcoming federal year, and is your agency the agency that will be dealing with those matching applications?
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, it's a combination of things. So particularly for the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, multiple agencies will be applying. We are the lead agency for many of the local partners who will be applying. So we have submitted an application that includes 19 projects that really work with local partners in the Great Lakes Basin.
Representative Clark has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I noticed there's a category under income for other. Could you tell me if any of those are some of the... Is this mic on? Can you hear me? Can you hear me okay?
No.
I don't think it's mic. Okay. Is that better? No?
No, just to speak loudly.
All right. I noticed there's a category for other here for some of the income. And I'm wondering if you can tell me what those sources are of other. And then I have a follow-up question then. Other sources. Projected revenues and budgetary regulatory expenses, and you have other sources.
Oh, I may project it.
Those sources would be, for instance, if we have EIS work or maybe we're doing a specialized funding source in income from grants specific to it. If we have PFA dollars that come into us, as you'll see, there's some dollars that come into us in that way. So there are kind of an assorted number of things that fit into the other category.
Madam Chair, does that include, and could you tell us about if there are dollars coming in from private industry, some of which you are regulating, some of those who you are regulating?
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, the only private industry dollars that would come into my agency, as I know it, are through application fees, training fees, or if they're working on environmental impact statements, and they're paying for the cost of that work.
So, Madam Chair, so the PCA doesn't get contributions from private industries to do some of your work? Separate from fees and charges?
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, no.
And then I do have another question. So, has the EPA been involved with the work that's gone on? I mean, has the PCA been involved with the EPA work that's been going on? The meetings that have been going on with PFCs, chemicals, the ones that were private and not known public.
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, we have not participated in those meetings directly. We have asked for the same information that was given to EPA at those. I don't know whether the program has received them or not.
And this would be information from 3M and on the EPA meetings. Okay.
Madam Chair,
can you check and see if there has been, if the agency has received any of that information, and if so, could that be shared with the committee?
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, we will check, and if it is public information, we will share it.
Continue. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative
Bunker. Thank you, Madam Chairman. Talbeck, can you tell me, is fines a source of income also? And could you please get to me a 5-year history of fines from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency?
Madam Chair, Representative Gunther, fines are a source of income, and I will have a slide that will have a 5-year history on it.
Good. Thank you.
I was hoping so. You're on the ball.
And now, moving on with the federal stimulus dollars, which are one-time dollars for the agency, although some of them spread across our fiscal year 10 and 11, as the federal fiscal year is off one quarter cycle. And so what I've provided you on this slide is the actual dollars received by the agency. For the wastewater infrastructure, we receive that money through the Public Facilities Authority. We do not receive that directly. But it is to help move projects forward that they end up funding. For the water quality management and planning, this is not only for staffing, but 40% of the dollar is pass-through funding. And that's to work on interstate efforts to develop coordinated monitoring, assessment, and standard setting, to align our local water planning and comprehensive planning with the activities on the watershed that we're doing with Clean Water Legacy, improving Minnesota's ability to measure and communicate the results of the TMDLs, and then promoting civic engagement. And that was approved by the federal government and had to align with their objectives for this money. To that end, we have three projects. One is a farmer-led watershed council that's a pilot project to bring and help farmers be more involved in the TMDL process and really look at the non-point from the farmer-led efforts, similar to what has been done in Iowa, and where they've really engaged in how they manage the nutrients and reduce impacts. One is down in the West Fork Des Moines River watershed, where they really coordinate seven different monitoring efforts in Minnesota and in Iowa, and that we look across the two states in this watershed and protect the waters jointly. And the other is in the Upper Mississippi River, where we're planning and coordinating and looking at water quality standards in the Mississippi River that impacts all the way down the stream and coordinates with Wisconsin. And so these are really pilot projects in an effort to see how we really have one standard that multiple states apply for. A little bit more on some of the work we're doing. The Public Facilities Authority, as you know, are the real managers of the federal stimulus for our wastewater infrastructure. But prior to that, we need to complete our technical review and permitting so the municipalities can actually put the work into practice. And to that end, there's been 25 awards for $182 million. As you might know, Minnesota is one of the leading states in both getting the dollars out and spending the dollars. And to that end, if there are extra dollars left now, February, the mid-February is a key date, and if there are other dollars available and we have projects ready to go, we can potentially even bring in more stimulus dollars to the state. And so we've continued our reviews. We've had 82 facility plans, which are the start of the planning process. 67 of them are approved. We have 47 plans and specs into the agency, and 37 of those are approved. Those are the real construction plans that municipalities use. And then we're preparing our 2010 project priority list, which is used to fund projects. We had 170 applications in December. The average is typically 50. And so we do believe that the additional stimulus money is making people feel confident they might have a chance of funding. And we have actually been able to fund lower on the priority points than we typically would have money for. So this has been an important initiative for the agency. Diesel retrofits, since we obtained the money in August, we've issued 54 grants. I'll provide you a little bit more detail on that. But they really reduce carbon dioxide and, of course, the particulate matter of 2.5, which is really a health impact. And then we're going to be able to clean up 62 leak sites. These are what we call fund finance, and I'll have a chart more on that, where no responsible party is available. And so really to get that land back, we're able to use federal dollars to clean up the land, make it productive, so municipalities can actually go to the development stage. We have four different clean diesel grants, one of which is the stimulus grant. And so I thought I would show you some of the projected results by the end of calendar year 2010 we intend to have done. And you can see that we're not just focusing in the metro area, although that is a primary focus, but we really do have projects across the state. In addition to this, the Minnesota Environmental Initiative has additional money that they're using across the state.
For the school buses, without context, these numbers don't tell me anything anyway. 2,500 school buses out of how many school buses in the state?
Madam Chair, I'll have to get you that number. I know that by the time we do 2,500, we are well on the way to having most of them all changed. But I'll have to get you that context number. As I will for the one of our major steps now is to be looking at fire trucks in the area. And so we will be completing 30 fire trucks in Minneapolis and St. Paul and improving those. And that would then grow to the municipalities outside of that. But I don't have the context for you yet on those items.
Okay. You have 2 to 3 airplane de-icers. I know that one of our most polluted sites for air quality in the metro area is the airport. What about all the other diesel stuff at the airport? I trust they have more than 2 to 3 de-icers.
Yes, Madam Chair, the airport is one of our pilots to actually see what could be done, not only on the de-icers, but all of their equipment. So we are trying to move in and convert all of their equipment over. But it will take some time to do. And I did ask the staff directly on this one, and they didn't, because they're just starting into that project, they didn't have enough information to provide me the context around that.
I think that Boston is way ahead of us and requiring electric vehicles at airports. Could, as you look at what we are doing here, could we compare with what Boston is doing?
I will ask the staff to do that, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Dill has a question. Oh, Representative Knuth and then Dill. I'm sorry.
Just a comment, Madam Chair, on the school buses. It is a finite project because we require the diesel emission reduction equipment on all new buses, is my understanding, starting in 2007.
I knew that before.
Representative Dill.
I just, Madam Chair, I wanted to just make sure that when they do the bus count, that includes the private industry, because I know there's a lot of contractors that do buses, not just the municipal, or not the school district-owned buses.
That's one issue that Representative Dill raised, that the Head Start buses are another issue for the little kids, because they are the ones that are the most vulnerable. And I think one of the things we all need to understand, I think we're just doing the first of 3 levels that could be done to school buses. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that is correct. And we are looking at private and public school buses.
And then a follow-up.
Yes, Representative Bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the airport thing, in California, I know that there is a fair amount of compressed natural gas where they have concentrated vehicle use, like at an airport. And I was wondering if compressed natural gas had been looked at for it rather than alternatives to diesel.
I think that's a good question. Let us have in a hearing some follow-up just on the airport air quality issue, because if you've looked at monitors in the past, it has been kind of the bad actor in the metropolitan area. So following up on the variety of questions, we will set aside some time to look at the airport. Does that work, Representative Dill?
Mm-hmm. And then doesn't the Minneapolis International at least have a de-icing collection system now to collect all the de-icing fluid that they use and reclaim it and recycle it?
I don't think that's up to snuff yet, but we can have that as one of the questions that should be addressed when we have a hearing back. Is that all right?
Yep.
Okay. Representative Clark's next.
Thank you. I just wanted to ask you a question in terms of the public vehicles. Are you looking at then the MTC then as well, the buses that are, or is that under your jurisdiction?
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, we're looking at all buses, both jointly with ours and with MEI, but we're starting first with the school buses as the most vulnerable population trying to do. But eventually, we'll want to convert as much as possible from diesel, because that is, particularly in the congested metro area, one of the air quality reduction goals that we have.
The reason I ask is I've had some conversation with Peter Bell at MTC probably about maybe a year and a half ago now, maybe 2 years, excuse me, about converting and actually getting some of the hybrid buses into the neighborhoods where there's a lot of bus ridership. and a lot of congestion. It happens to be where a lot of the Head Start kids are and, you know, school buses and so on. And so I'm just, and basically he told me at the time, you know, they're just too expensive. We're going to keep them located downtown in some other places where, you know, it's people sitting out having their cafe latte, don't like to have diesel blowing in their face, that sort of thing. And we had kind of an interesting conversation because the folks who are living 24 hours with buses in their neighborhood, because they're very transit dependent, I would hope would get a higher priority. But he said it was going to be a while. And I'm just wondering, so when you are monitoring or, in some cases it looks like you're doing more than monitoring, you're actually helping get the grants to bring in additional non-diesel buses and so on. Are you working with them closely, and is and are the inner city areas a priority that you're focusing on?
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, I will have to go back and ask the staff, but we do have one of our particular grants is the congested mitigation and air quality, which is the metropolitan area, and to convert and to change all that. But what the staff are doing directly with MTC, I would have to ask them.
You know, I'd really appreciate, you know, learning that. One of the things that I know in doing some research on asthma, which is an issue that I've been working on a lot in the last couple of years, I believe that mobile sources, such as diesel and so on, are one of the major, actually one of the number one causes of asthma in some of our inner city areas where we have a lot of kids with asthma. And asthma is the number one reason kids miss school, in, at least in Minneapolis. So there's a real incentive here, I think, to try to focus in that area, and it has a lot of repercussions in education and other areas too. So I'd be interested in whatever you can find out. Thank you,
Representative Clark. I think asthma is the number one cause of absenteeism, not just in Minneapolis but in the metro area, and we maybe should find out which of those two it is.
Okay,
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Director Hallbeck, in your evaluation of cleaning up some of these diesel emissions, do you include an analysis of the benefits of using a higher blend of biodiesel in some of these diesel engines and the cost-benefit ratio involved with that?
Representative Virginius and Representative Torkelson, I don't know whether the staff are doing it. That's a really good question, particularly as you move beyond the mandated, as Representative Knuth did for school buses 2007, diesel trucks, they all have new emissions, so what do we get in addition to using the new biodiesel would be an interesting comparison to do. We have not done that to my knowledge yet.
Just a follow-up, it would seem to make sense that if a higher blend of biodiesel would be beneficial, it would be much less expensive to incorporate that into the system as opposed to retrofitting the mechanical portions of these vehicles.
I think what we'll just have a time on air quality at coming up, looking at some of these issues. If you want to continue.
My next area that I wanted to reflect was our petroleum remediation efforts on the leaky underground storage tanks. And again, we're funded in three ways from this. First, from the state petrol fund that provides some administrative dollars. From a federal, what we call LUS grant, which is also staffing dollars from EPA to manage and oversee these sites. And then we had additional federal stimulus grants, which really are to hire contractors to get the work done and improve those sites. In order to take advantage of this money, we have redirected staff from other areas to assist in this. So earlier we talked about what were potentially environmental review staff doing if we weren't having those projects. We've redirected a couple of those into this program to help make sure that we're making progress here. And again, that we don't lose the dollars here. This is another particular area where, because we have shown progress in the activities, that we will likely, if other states, and word on the street is other states have not made as much progress, that we would get some of that money that's returned back to EPA and that we can use in this state.
Yes, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you tell me what is our inventory of how many leaking storage tanks that we have?
Could you speak just a little louder so we can hear you?
Can you tell us how many leaking storage tanks that we have currently in the state of Minnesota?
Madam Chair, the question was what's the kind of inventory of leaky storage site? We currently have about 1,200 active sites. So there are about 1,200 sites needing to be fixed and remediated at this point. Every year we continue to receive about 350 new sites reported to us, and our goal is to close out more than we receive. And so we have and as you can tell on the black line on the chart, we're making a downward progress. And our goal is in the next 3 years to reduce this by a third. And so with the additional resources we've been receiving, and EPA has indicated that we're going to receive some additional, we'll put some more staff into that and continue to really decrease this so that we're making more reductions than new sites coming in. And again, because that makes that land back productive and ready for development. So that ends kind of the federal stimulus part, and I thought I'd remind us back to where we were on the biennial budget, and our budget splits just about 50-50 for each year, not quite exactly, but so this is the total budget, and as I talk particular areas, I will reflect those FY 2010 dollars to do. One of the areas of particular concern that we've heard from the legislature and as we have worked with groups is the need to reduce greenhouse gases. And particularly one of the areas that is easiest to achieve this is in our integrated solid waste management activities. You might recall in the 2008 Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group, while they indicated solid waste was only 3-4% of the activity, it's the easiest one for us to reduce. And they set out some goals for us. And in the 2007 agency policy report, we identified the need to kind of look at what the role could be in this area. And we got some guidance from that stakeholder group. And what we found was that the majority of solid waste is generated in four regions of the state. 70% of the waste is generated in the area around Rochester, Duluth, St. Cloud, and the Metro. So we're going to be focusing work to reduce our solid waste in those areas and to track that equivalency in greenhouse gas reduction. And so you'll begin to see charts like this. The red line being kind of the base 2005 number, the green line being where our goals are and what we want to reduce, and then the yellow line where we're actually achieving the reductions and where we are. And we'll be looking at it from a cumulative and then from each of the centroid areas. And in order to make progress on this, the commissioner actually assigned a unit of subject matter experts to start working in January on the outstate areas first. In the metro area, we work with the counties here, and we'll continue to work with them as well. But we really want to understand what it would take to make that source reduction and recycling move forward. And so we have not only the staff in that unit, but we have charts for each of those centroid areas so we can track our progress. And we really expect that once we're making progress in the centroid areas, those same sorts of tools that are available there will work in other places of the state, and we'll make that same progress outside. But we really have some focused efforts going on.
You're showing reduction from the score data. What do you attribute that to right now?
Madam Chair, right now our analysis from my experts actually believe it's generated from less waste being generated. Not yet more recycling, not yet more composting in the other, but that we're really seeing in this economic times less waste generated.
So it's probably a result of the economy. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, ma'am.
That's what my guess.
So that's what we want to be able to track. If our work is succeeding, we should see a difference in that line based on our work and not just the economy.
So we would see increased recycling rates, increased composting rates, and that's how we would figure out what's going on.
Correct, ma'am.
Yes, Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to note that the Minnesota Environmental Initiative ran the stakeholder group, and there was a report that they came up with, and I believe there were either 16 or 24 proposals that had 100% consensus. And so I'll be bringing forward a couple of those 100% consensus ideas for consideration. But I think the issue of the solid waste report that they put together is something this committee might want to look at in more depth. Because as was stated, that this is really low-hanging fruit in reducing greenhouse gas emissions, and it's one of those areas where it saves money and it reduces pollution.
We will make sure we find some time to hear about these.
So I wasn't going to spend a lot of time on each of these graphs. I just want you to note that as we move forward in the future, you'll be seeing this as part of our outcomes and what we're really able to achieve. On the before I leave the Centroid one, I did want to note that the chair had asked me to provide a chart relative to air quality standards and where our reductions are. And as I asked our staff to look at where they were, they are indeed putting together a graph that has the standards and our reductions to that, and then each of the pollutants where the standard is in that. Unfortunately, the timing isn't right. They're preparing that for the mid-April pollutant report, and so they did not have a chart ready yet for me to do, and they didn't want to provide it to me in a half shape, but they are producing that, and maybe that would be timely as you talk more about the greenhouse gases. They certainly wanted to come and explain it more.
Since we're doing outcomes-based budgeting, I think we need to have the outcomes. So April's too late. We're going to have to find a time before then if they're to have at least what they have. So when we do the diesel and the airport, maybe that's a good time to do it. But we do need to, this is all about outcomes. Okay. Go ahead.
So now I want to focus on our regulatory efforts in 2010, and so I provided you a summary here of what you could probably total in the spreadsheet that we discussed earlier. And you'll note that even in our regulatory areas, water is our biggest focus, both from permitting and compliance and enforcement and the assistance. And so it just reflects, again, that level of effort we need from the data monitoring and the impaired waters and knowing the complete system. And again, probably some of you have seen this chart, but this is the progress we have been making overall in our permitting efforts to be more timely, not reducing quality, but actually reducing lost time on those areas that we have control of. So making sure that we pick up applications using tools like Six Sigma and Lean to make sure that we're efficient in our processes. We've looked at how do we provide standardized forms? How do we provide better guidance so that the applicant knows what's expected of them, and to improve the completeness of those applications to do? And I thought I would just highlight a couple of the areas we're doing. And this is our air permitting. And this will be a common theme that you'll probably see, is that general permits typically take less time than individual permits. And that's because general permits are set once. You go through a public process once. They are for a number of facilities that can operate and meet the same standards in one setting, and so you need one consistent permit. And so it takes less when you get the information coming in the door. What do you need to evaluate? Individual permits, whether it's water, air, or land, require more time because you're tailoring it to that facility and to the standards that they need to meet. And so they typically take a little bit more time.
I understand the need to move on rapidly on the permits. But what we need is the next step here. These are the activities you've performed. What we need is what the result is for our water, for our air, for our land. Because we have been permitting activities for years, and our water continues to deteriorate. So permitting is not a measure of what's going on out there. So how are we going to wrap our hands around what's going on out there?
Madam Chair, there are a couple ways that we intend to do that. They're not all wrapped together yet. You'll see in a later chart I have the treatment efficiencies of the wastewater treatment in kind of four major areas. You'll later see a chart that shows both the reductions we have pointed out we need in the TMDLs and what we're achieving today. And then we're going to have to wrap those together and to provide you ultimately kind of where the watersheds stand on their evaluation of being impaired or where we're protecting. And we don't quite have that entire system put together yet, but that's kind of the progress we're making, is to start with kind of understanding what's happening at the wastewater treatment, start to understand what's happening with those watershed plans that we're going to be developing with the TMDLs, using the monitoring data on the overall effectiveness, and then linking them together, as you say, to what's the end goal. We do not have that all in one system yet. That's taking a little bit of effort. We have a major database effort going forward on the TMDLs that the Clean Water Fund helped fund, that we're getting going, that we call a TMDL portal, where we bring some of this, all of this work together. But that's the ultimate goal, is to show what we're moving off the impaired waters list and what our watersheds look like as we move forward.
I read a report on results of the TMDLs. It was about this thick in beautiful color. And I imagine some of the other folks here have read it. And the results were things like, we held four meetings. There were 14 people at the meetings. It was all about activities. I think I found one in that thick book, one possible getting close to a result. So as we move forward, I hope we don't spend any more money just tracking activities, but the results of those activities. That's what is expected of us, you and us. So that was a frightening piece to read.
We are having, Madam Chair, those discussions almost daily, both on the prevention side, our treatment side, and the TMDLs. And I hope that one of the charts I show you today on the TMDL show that where we're trying to move to, so that you can see trends on the actual reductions. It takes those activities, as you know, to get the outcomes, but it's the outcomes we need to understand.
Super. Okay, if you want to move on.
I tend to show feedlots because they are an effort where we're working with individuals more than so in our industrial and municipalities, and so the impact to have these timely and to have reasonable work with those producer groups is important. And so, again, to show the improvement we've made on getting those projects out. And this is one area where we have a 60-day goal to get the permits out after we receive a complete permit application, and so to move and make sure that we're meeting those days is important. And again, not too much on our land. We just continue to make progress in each of these areas. Then I also thought it important to share, we had a number of discussions last year about environmental assessment worksheets and our need to complete those, be timely with them, but also keep them moving. And some of the progress, again, in this will be having forms that reflect what we're expecting to receive so that we're not going back and forth, and providing that in such a way that both the citizens and those local governments who need to make decisions based on environmental review have the information they need in a way that they can understand it. And so that's always going to be a work in progress, but we continue to try to be both timely and efficient doing it. Earlier we had some comments about the compliance and enforcement, so I did have some slides on what we're doing in this area. Again, from not only our activities, but also when we work with county partners, both in the feedlot program, the tanks program, and stormwater in the past, we work with counties on trying to maintain compliance, and they help us with inspections, and they help with the individuals come into compliance.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Hallback, just going back to the MPCA permitting part of things, have you had a change in staffing? Have you had to redirect in that area as well as you did in the other area?
Madam Chair, Representative, we have, in the course of the past 4 years, added staffing to permitting. We've also looked at our processes for permitting so that we could manage the permits with the same level of staffing, and our fee rules last year were to maintain that staffing, not increase it. So we are trying to do this both efficiently but with some staffing. We did move people into particularly water permits with the stimulus to make sure that we could maintain that.
Okay. Can you tell me how, Madam Chair, can you tell me how much of an increase? Or?
Madam Chair, remember, since 2007, we added roughly 16 in the area overall of air and water permitting, particularly on the industrial side. And we repointed the federal stimulus dollars paid for 12 FTE, probably 8 of which came from other areas of the agency, to make sure that we were staying timely with the municipalities.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Director Hallback, with the trends downward, very positive, and thank you for that. As the economy starts to turn around and more people start to expand, or business begins to expand, are we positioned in the PCA to continue that trend downward? Or if there's an increase in the number of permit applications, are we going to start seeing that trend go back up?
Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, we are indeed trying to position ourselves to be ready to do that. So while we're not resting on those reductions, we are continuing to look at the processes that we have, the forms that we have, and making sure that those are effective. We would probably bring back to the environmental review some of the staff we've repointed for federal stimulus so that they would be ready to take on those activities and be there. So we do believe that we're positioned to do that and maintain it.
Thank you.
Want to continue?
So on this chart, what I've provided you is a five-year look at our enforcement actions. So not the compliance. Compliance activities go on regularly as you work with people and answer questions and try to do training. This is really those sorts of actions that we have deemed enforcement worthy. So not just missing a date by one day, but actually having standard violations, missing critical paperwork that do it. And this is shown by the various media types. In no one year provides us the insight you need, just as no one year in kind of treatment provides you the insight of what's happening in our streams. You really need to look at the trend and then ask yourselves why. And so that is what our enforcement folks do. And they look for why we might need to do some preventive actions and working directly, whether it's a municipality or industry, to find out why they have repetitious. Are there commonalities that training would provide? We do a number of wastewater certification training, and so when we're looking at the water issues, we really look at those common things and try to train and make the operator ready and prepared so that they don't have the violations. Our job isn't just to find the violations, it's to ensure compliance on an ongoing basis. And it's to ensure it across all medias and across all facilities so we have a level playing field. We don't write permits and we don't write rules assuming people will violate them. We assume people want to comply, and it's our job to help them do that. We also try as best we can to provide our actions in some kind of benefit for the environment. So what are the pounds, both in all the media, of what we are actually preventing or eliminating from the environment happening? And so this is very preliminary as we try to work with the Environmental Protection Agency and other states on how to do this. This is probably the most difficult area of enforcement. You know, enforcement is about bringing people back into compliance, deterring kind of repeat violations. But then there's also that benefit that happens to the environment that we try to maintain and collect. So the next question was, what's the penalties? And so that's what this new effort is. As pointed out, this is not yet on the web page. We are trying to do this. It's a work in progress. We do know that people have concerns about how much we penalized. Are they equitable in how we do that? Again, no one year tells the story. No one year tells kind of what are the situations. We really do try to evaluate what's happening and what can we do to prevent this.
Madam Chair.
Yes,
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Director Halbach, could you explain the big jump between 2006 and 2009? And what type of industry are we talking about? Is there a one source of the additional enforcements going on? Or can you just give us a little more detail about that graph, please?
Madam Chair, Representative, really the change will be in the types of enforcement activities we had going. And as we improve our ability to look at DMR data, which is the monthly wastewater data for municipalities and industries, it will come. The last couple of years, yes, we've seen more impacts from the ethanol plants. But not all of this is attributed to the ethanol plants. It's municipalities, it's feedlots, it's hazardous waste sites. But what we are seeing in the last couple years is indicative of a new industry coming online and getting their reports in shape, getting kind of managing, understanding what a permit requires and doing it. We've had in the past you would see that same sort of thing maybe happening with the sugar beet company. Again, these are multimedia kinds of industries where they're not just focused on air. They have hazardous waste, they have solid waste, they have water, and they have air issues. And to have a system in place that allows you to meet all of those permits and understand what's going on, it's indicative of a new industry. We're trying to understand that and guide them so that they can meet those compliance. Again, the goal isn't to get the penalty, it's to get compliance.
Representative Purcell is next, then Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Hallback, just a curiosity question here, and maybe something for the future, but the two graphs you just showed us, the enforcement benefit by media pounds and the enforcement penalties by media dollars, and just kind of, I'm thinking in a pounds per dollar kind of a scenario. If I look at 2008 and look at what we got in how many pounds we got benefit per the dollar, and I look at 2009, just as for instance, I'm trying to reconcile those, and curious as to how you think they may or may not be reconciled.
Madam Chair, Representative, it's a good question. There'll be a multi kind of faceted approach to getting that pounds per dollar is how much did you put into it? So in other words, the dollars of inspections or reviewing of reports, the actual weight difference between kind of those in the water media and hazardous waste as compared to the air, and then ultimately what those compliance are.
One follow-up here, if I may, Madam Chair, and thank you for that. That would bring me, I guess, as a logical extension to maybe there can be another metric about the toxicity of that we're keeping out of the environment, some kind of a toxic equivalence associated with the pounds, so that we can understand that maybe a little better. Might make it more complex, but what you're saying is, you know, if we're removing something, we're removing lead, for instance, as opposed to aluminum or something that's much lighter, how are we going to be able to tell that? And there may be a toxicity equivalence we might be able to attach to it.
I think when we see your air figures, we will see them by NOx or SOx reducing. But we don't have that similar way, or I haven't seen you give us a similar way of showing in waters or in toxics or any other thing other than air. So we're missing a lot of information about how we're really doing. I'm sitting here thinking, is there an equivalent way to measure what you're permitting to go into the water as you measure what we're permitting to go into air? And I think we need to have that measurement, because it's, as far as I know, it's lacking right now. And so when you look at your water reports compared to your air reports will show trend lines over years. Your water reports show nothing. I mean, there's just nothing there except activity. So somehow we are going to have to make an equivalency for water, an equivalency for some of the other things weighted that Representative Purcell is talking about. Obviously, you have that information. When do you think you can help us out actually understanding what's going on?
Madam Chair, I'd have to go back to my data folks to know exactly when, but we certainly will give you a date for that. I think this is going to be an area that is continually going to be a little bit of work in progress till we meet both with you and probably on the policy side with Representative Eakin's committee too, as we bring together kind of the results of what we're doing and then how do we fund.
Yeah, well, we need to know what we're getting for our dollar, and that's what this committee is all about. So it may be a work in progress, but I want to see the first piece of work. And so we're going to have that coming back here fairly soon. Does that work for you, Representative?
That's fine. You bet.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Hallbeck, just a quick question. When you charge the penalties, does that money go into the general fund or does that go to the MPCA?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, until last year, the penalties were split between the agency and the general fund. Last year's legislation changed those penalties to come to the agency. And so we do know it's even more important for us to be diligent about how we do those penalties, and we have quite a process to go so that I can't establish the penalties alone. It's really a standardized approach across the agency. And as we look forward and project dollars, we're going to be basing those on averages of past activities, not projecting that I'm going to collect $4 million, for instance, and do it. So we're not setting targets for how much penalty we collect. It just is. And so we're being very conservative on that because the ultimate goal and the outcome in this area would be everybody's in compliance and you'd collect no penalties. I mean, that really is what you're trying to achieve.
If you want to go ahead, we have 15 more minutes. We want to make sure we get all through this. I think we'll do that.
Okay. Again, this example is just another example of how we measure against our strategic plan, and in the fall of the year we look at these kinds of things and the outcomes to do, and in the spring of the year we really look at more the activities. So we really are trying to get to your outcomes and the activities and the difference. This is just another one of those graphs that we use so the managers can understand what's happening. In this case, we would know that we're having more compliance issues in our industrial activity, and we'd look for why that's yellow and not meeting the compliance goals we have. And these compliance goals we set with the federal government on how we're to achieve them.
When it comes to nitrogen, we had testimony before from Galen Reitz that we don't have our nitrogen standard for our water, so we're not moving in that. Do we have a nitrogen standard for wastewater treatment systems of emissions from a system?
Madam Chair, committee members, we have nitrogen standards for the discharge and wastewater treatments in different capacities. For instance, it might be an ammonia standard, not truly a nitrogen. And you've asked me for some cost relative to creating those, and we are working on those. And there'll be probably a couple different levels of that, both toxicity, the nitrate part of the component, and so we are presenting that in the different manners of which you'd set standards by, and being able to evaluate against that.
Some of our friends in the civil engineering department at the university have said that if, and I don't want to speak for them, I think maybe having discussions with them about nitrogen compliance at wastewater treatment systems would possibly greatly reduce the endocrine disruptors that are getting into our waters. So I hope you're having those discussions with the civil engineers who know this subject like no other.
Madam Chair, not only have my engineers back at the agency talked with those, they're also talking with EPA, and we're doing a joint study with them. They have been in contact with the state of Washington, who has done a study on those same sorts of things. So they are trying to bring together that information so we do the right thing here in the state.
And when do you expect to have results?
I will have the analysis that we've done for you for the cost in that by the end of this week.
Okay.
And that lays out a timeline as well for doing rules and developing the standard.
Okay. But when I'm thinking about wastewater treatment systems, we're spending a lot of money on them right now, And if we, because we're lacking a standard, if we have to go back and say to them, now you've got to do it again, it doesn't seem to be a prudent waste expenditure of our dollar. So looking out for our dollar and not having to spend a dollar again, I think we've got to move. Okay?
Yes, Madam Chair. And again, this is one of the additional, and so you'll see this as a separate sheet on your things, where we're trying to show the reductions that we're actually doing. This graph represents 96% of the wastewater generated and discharged in Minnesota, and the reductions achieved in these areas to do. And so, for instance, BOD, which is the oxygen sink often in water, 98% treatment from our wastewater plants. There is 470 million gallons a day of wastewater treated in this state. And so this will become a trends analysis. The staff have told me by next year they intend to have that sort of trend analysis for these. And as they understand more what's happening across, they will be looking at those sorts of additional components. These are the kind of main that you will see for standards in most wastewater treatment plants. Last year, we also talked a lot about the subsurface treatment systems and the compliance inventories happening. And so we have the number completed through fiscal year 9, and those we are projecting to complete in this biennium. At this rate, it will take 10 years to complete all the inventories. We hope that with the 10 and 11 that we're going to define ways to complete the inventories without necessarily visiting each and every site and doing a personal inspection. And I know that that was one of the goals as we were funded last year, and so we will have a report on that. But the other part of the inspection is to actually know how many of those facilities are in compliance that we're inspecting. And there are two kinds of critical areas. First one is, are they impacting our groundwater and need to be upgraded? And the other, are they imminent public threats? And they have a much shorter time to come into compliance. And so this is the information we are tracking. We have an estimated 450,000 subsurface treatment systems across the state. So again, we're looking at being able to move forward and project this as it comes across the state. Next year, this will also be a trend line. We have started to look at how much untreated sewage discharge we have. In the calendar year 2007, we had 441 million gallons. Since that time, we have nine small communities become in compliance. There are 100 unsewered communities currently, and so this is just the start of those. And then, of course, repairing those straight pipes and eliminating those from direct discharges to the surface water as well. So we will, again, have a trend that really moves us into treatment and eliminates the untreated sewage. Spend a lot of time on our regulatory efforts, but we also do have prevention and assistance efforts. And this is a start of some of the activities we are working with public entities in reducing their greenhouse gas emissions by 15% from the 2005 baseline to 2015. Again, at this point, we are still tracking activities, as the chair has noticed. And in our discussions with the staff is to convert not only the number of activities that entities are taking, but really what are the outcomes. So how much energy have we saved? How much recycling have we increased? We do have an LCCMR project where we are providing schools some dollars to increase their source reduction and increase their recycling. We are tracking those outcomes, and so we'll have a report when that work is finished to show that. Our Minnesota Green Corps is a new program we've started where, again, we're in the communities to actually improve that work. We have, not unlike AmeriCorps is doing elsewhere, people working right in the communities to improve their source reduction and their recycling goals to get it up. Some are in schools, some are working with farmer markets, so we actually reduce the waste to start with.
Chair.
Yes, Representative Clark.
Is it possible to get a list of where your Green Corps members are located?
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, yes it is.
I appreciate that.
Our next one is the closed landfill program, and I'll move quickly since we have seen this before. Again, this is just a reminder, we're trying to end the construction on this and move to maintenance. And so that those dollars for construction can be used elsewhere. Depending on where the bonding bill comes out, we will move right down this priority list for projects and complete them to do. And then quickly on our clean water fund, because
I know we're running out of time, but I just wanted to ask a question on the closed landfill, especially the Washington County landfill. I think you're aware that I raised a question about the occupational health and safety of the workers who were involved in that. Have you got any update for us on that? What is the agency's position on what happened there with those workers?
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, OSHA did come out to the site and did do an inspection, and while they found, if I recall on your testimony at the bonding about the concern about whether the workers were properly clothed and had the equipment. I don't have the OSHA report, but as I understand from my staff is they did find some minor violations, but not relative to the activity they were doing for us. Other than that, I don't have much more detail on it. They are required for every construction project, though, to do a safety plan. And so they are required to have one and to follow it.
I think that this is going to come up to be a separate issue that needs some following up on. So maybe we need to make an appointment between Representative Clark and your staff that has been doing the OSHA work. Representative Russell.
Well, I just wanted to follow up briefly, and Representative Clark and I have talked about that, and I for one would be very interested to see the plan that was developed for that site. I would like to see it.
We'll follow up on that. If you want to continue.
Again, I'm going to briefly go over some of the Clean Water Fund because I know another committee will do it in detail, but to provide this committee what we're doing relative to this, I thought it important. Again, for the biennium, the agency has $51 million. We do know it's important to get the work done and achieve the activities. With this, we are also, though, working with the LCCMR staff and the Legislative Coordinating Committee to update the website. We're working very closely with them so that our information and the information on that website can link seamlessly and that people can find both websites regardless of where they are.
I'll be very quick, Madam Chair. Ms. Hallback, on the Clean Water Fund, with these expenditures, did you have to use general fund expenditures to start on these constitutional dollars? And if so, is that completed, or are you now on the sales tax dollars?
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, at the start of the biennium, we actually did a cash plan with management and budget, and we were allowed to start. They funded it at the general fund. We did not have to use ours, and we are on sales tax dollars right now. And so that cash management showed that our projects, most of our project dollars wouldn't start going out till January, but our monitoring proceeded ahead. And that's actually what this chart pretty much reflects is the money already expended, and you'll see that most of that occurred in the staffing part for the assessment and the TMDL. And now you will start to see the project dollars go out to do, and they will catch up with that then. And again, just quickly, where we've been with the watershed monitoring, we did pointed pretty inefficient monitoring in the past, and our impaired TMDLs were really on segments. We're moving to, I think most of you know this, we've been doing watershed monitoring, and we will now be doing watershed TMDLs so that we can do the protection along with the restoration, and so that you really have a watershed plan, not just a segment repair plan. So that is the movement we're going to, so that you can see we still are on our 10-year cycle for the monitoring. That means 7 watersheds will receive the intensive monitoring this year, and 7 next year. Citizens will be monitoring 200 to 300 lakes and streams for us this year to move. We are proceeding with the endocrine investigations that we were doing and some of the other programs, and we will have those results for you. So we are on time for our 10 and 11 activities. And then just quickly, again, you can see the ramp up on those studies. We will be converting these to watershed reports, and it'll take a couple years to do that complete conversion. So this will look a little different. For every TMDL project you see, though, there are probably 4 listings that we're addressing, which is way ahead of where EPA sets the target. And then again, we're trying to do, as you say, what are we accomplishing with these reports? So the light blue is what, based on the TMDLs completed, what reductions we do need, and the burgundy is what we've been achieving to date. And this will also be moving to trend reports so that you can see where we're doing. And with that, again, just a quick briefing of where we are and that we are on schedule with the TMDLs. And that finishes my report.
Very good. Very timely. I know there are going to be more questions, but we will get to those when we do the budget. Thank you for doing that and really moving ahead on making the picture clearer for Minnesotans. So I appreciate that. Representative Purcell.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move adoption of the minutes here. We've got several from November 16th, February 9th, and February 11th.
Representative Purcell is going to move the minutes for February.
November 16th, February 9th, and February 11th.
All right. When I call the meeting to order, we did not have a quorum. We did achieve a quorum. All those in favor of the minutes, adopting the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Minutes are adopted. Meeting's adjourned.